Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast, going daily for the T20 World Cup. England have been dealt a T20 World Cup humbling by Ireland, making their game against Australia on Friday now a virtual must-win for both sides. With me to discuss that game is former England batter Mark Butcher.
Hi Butch, Ireland beat England by 5 runs and put a big dent in their T20 World Cup hopes. Did you see that coming?
No, I did not. I'm not sure anybody did. I mean, particularly given that England won the toss and bowled first on what looked like pretty decent bowling conditions, to be honest. And also with the weather around, you always feel that somehow gives the advantage to the team chasing. However, none of those things turned out to be true. England didn't bowl particularly well with a new ball. And then with the bat, they were strangely static, I thought. The New Zealand, Ireland bowled superbly. I mean, let's take nothing away from Balbirnie, sort of taking the fight to England, who bowled far too short. And then the way that all of Ireland's seamers bowled. I mean, Josh Little is a real threat, but Adair and co. also just pitched the ball up and got it to move sideways. But having said all that, the depth that England have, I mean, they've chosen to play literally every single one of the batters in the side. For them to sort of, they just were sort of static targets, I thought. Ireland moved around the crease a lot. They tried to give themselves a bit of room. They'd come down the pitch. England sort of just stayed in their crease. It was very old-fashioned batting from all of them. I mean, obviously, you lose Joss in the first over. That shouldn't really be a worry with England's depth. But as it was, I think they allowed themselves to be bowled out rather too easily, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we should talk a bit more about Ireland later, but let's start with England and the batters, as you say, and go through a couple of them. I guess first, Ben Stokes. He's got 4 single-figure scores in 5 innings in T20I since returning to the side. This is kind of what people feared might happen, but hoped wouldn't, I guess, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of, when we did our sort of pre-tournament pod, I sort of said that, you know, for me, Stokes or Moeen were the two guys who were kind of, if England were going to look to play the extra specialist bowler, then one of those two guys would probably miss out. And given Stokes' lack of T20 cricket for England or for anybody else in the last couple of years, you would have said it would probably be him. Obviously, I mean, Topley's injury sort of threw a big spanner in the works, didn't it? They had to try and sort of rejuggle batting depth, plus having, to find another guy to take the new ball for them, which maybe has made Stokes' position a little bit more solid in that team. But I still think, you know, England ended up 5 runs short on Duckworth-Lewis, 5 wickets down. still had Sam Curran and Chris Wokes in the hutch, and Liam Livingstone had only just got to the crease. So, you know, you can have too much batting. I know that sounds a bit daft, but you can sort of, you know, leave yourself with resources left on the bench, or have batters kind of leave it up to the next guy. Well, he'll pick it up, and nobody takes on the metal themselves.
Yeah, I guess given that England have that depth, that it's Milan is quite an odd one at the moment, because throughout this year it seemed like he's kind of done away with that slow starting sort of reputation he had, and then this tournament he's had a couple of really slow innings where he hasn't just started slow, he's sort of continued slow as well. And these are on the pitches when, you know, this was kind of a lot of the argument for sticking with Milan, was that when you get to Australia on these pitches, this would be where he would be the guy. And that hasn't really happened. I mean, it is only two games, and he has been, you know, he has started quick for a lot of this year. Do England back him? They do have Phil Salt on the sidelines, and that is a massive game.
Yeah, it is. And again, you know, the three left-hander thing as well, that England kind of have lined up one after the other, I think is also slightly problematic. But again, yeah, I mean, again, it was bizarre because Milan sort of just, again, he was probably the most guilty of sort of just staying put, didn't come down the pitch, didn't give himself a bit of room. He just kind of stayed there, almost four 5 day batting style, and allowed the bowlers to bowl at him. And it's slightly curious because he's not played like that over the course of this year, and whether or not, again, that the sort of hangover between losing early wickets, not wanting to then, you know, lose a further one in the power play, which again is understandable because I think that was exactly the right thing to do. But England in trying to protect wickets in the power play lost three anyway, you know. so his innings was a bad one, and he will feel under pressure. But I still don't think that he's the one that's under the pump. You know, and people will sort of say, well, Stokes is capable of doing something magnificent at some point, and his fielding and his bowling are all play into it. But then England have got lots of other batters in that lineup who are also capable of doing it, who are all batting one position lower than they would be otherwise. So it's an interesting one. I think, and I was worried about this before it started, I think they've in trying to kind of fit them all in, they've kind of left themselves with a little bit more of a dilemma than if they'd have grasped the nettle and left one of them out. And that might be, as I said, it was one of the three left-handers before we started the tournament, Stokes, Milan or Moeen Ali. I think, you know, Moeen's a must-play. Milan, before the tournament, was a must-play. And so, you know, somebody's going to have to make that call at some point.
Yeah. Is there an argument for pushing Stokes down the order, do you think? I mean, he was batting at six before he kind of had this long absence from the T20I side. And then you could have Moeen at number four, and he showed today how good he was, or Brooke in that sort of crunch engine room slot. Is that something that England could do, or do you think that this is their thing?
No, I think so. I don't see any reason why he has to bat number four. And again, you've got that whole two left-handers, one after the other. You know, England haven't been flexible and sort of split them up at any point. You know, obviously, that the obvious thing is you have lots of people padded up, both Brooke and Stokes. And if the lefty goes, you send in a lefty. If the righty goes, you send in a righty. But they've kind of stuck with Milan three, Stokes at four. But yeah, I think perhaps more than anything, more than, you know, worrying about the lineup and how they're all coming in one after the other, it's just the curious thing is just just how static they were. It was a really un-England-like batting performance. And whilst you're not sort of calling for sort of mad recklessness or anything, because the ball was moving around, it was just a case that they just stood there and, you know, allowed those guys to hit a very 4 day, 5 day length without really getting any sort of pushback.
Yeah, let's talk about Ireland a bit, because they were really good, and they've been good throughout this tournament. I mean, in that Super 12 campaign, in that first round campaign, they were in that sort of group of death, and halfway through it looked completely out against Scotland, and then came back and then beat West Indies. Val Burney was excellent today, and he's really likable, sort of unflappable, calm, cool, understated character, I think. Logan Tucker and Curtis Camphor both bowled, but Josh Little is kind of he's almost like the breakout star of that Ireland side, I guess, in terms of a young guy who could attract that kind of global interest, I guess.
Yeah, and he's you know, I saw him sort of live for the first time last year during 100, and he was playing for Manchester Originals up at Old Trafford. I think he picked up five for, it escapes me who it was against. It might have been Birmingham, I'm not entirely sure. But he bowled quickly and ruffled people with the short ball, and sort of managed to catch batters on the crease when he got it up there as well. So he's a bit quicker than he looks, slippery, aggressive. And he's got that little bit like Sam Curran in that the angle, the trajectory is quite sort of flat and quite skiddy and quite at you. He's obviously a little bit quicker than young Sam. But yeah, I mean, he's fantastic. And he was brilliantly backed up by the rest of the seam bowlers, really, who got extracted movement, brought the stumps into play, and bowled as well as England bowled badly in their first 10.
Mm. And that on the seam, it was that ball from Fionn Hand to Stokes was just amazing, wasn't it? I mean, his second ball at T20 World Cup, it kind of snakes in, hits the pitch, comes in more, goes for his back pad gap. That was where I really sat up and was like, hold on, something's happening here. It was just amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and sort of Stokes left groping with the ball nipping between bat and pad. And given conditions like that, you don't necessarily, I think Owen Morgan said it at the back end, and it's something that I've long agreed with and long believed, that the more you have going for you in terms of movement, the less you have to do. You know, run up, bowl a good line and length, and let the conditions do their thing. And Ireland did that fantastically well.
I guess both these sides have big games now, actually, because Ireland against Afghanistan, that could be a result that sees them make top four in the group now. And even possibly if they win that, then they're, you know, two wins from three and possibly need to nick one more to be in with a shout of the semis, possibly. That is getting ahead of themselves, but that is a huge game. And then the England-Australia game as well. Do England change anything? It's kind of a must-win for both sides, and if they lose it, they'll be dependent on other results, I think.
Yeah, well, both teams have sort of misfired, haven't they? You know, Marcus Stoinis had to go into Hulk mode to get them over the line against Sri Lanka the other day. Top order's not looked particularly flash. Same has been for England. England obviously had the better of Australia in the warm-up matches. But yeah, you go down to a sort of, it looks as though it's probably a must-win game for both, isn't it, now Friday? I mean, England potentially could have put, you know, Australia out of the competition had they won today against Ireland. But now it really is coming down to whoever's got the biggest balls to try and stay in it on Friday. And you know, I think the way that England have played against Australia, with the style of cricket that both teams like to play, I think you would back England to win that. However, you know, the confidence can't be particularly high at the moment. They've had two tough batting pitches, and they haven't particularly played well on either. And you know, it hasn't been that sort of freewheeling, go out there and bash it to all parts competition for them, much as it wasn't in the World Cup in 2019, that has allowed them to go out there and play the way they enjoy playing most. So some meetings and some not stern words, but some honesty about, okay, well, if we come up against conditions like this again, you know, do we think batting first might not be a bad idea? We've seen teams in the course of this tournament with the movement that's been around, being able to post what would be sort of you'd call below par scores on less bowler friendly pitches and defend them reasonably successfully. I mean, you know, Pakistan should have won that game against India, no doubt. And so, you know, that they might look at that and think to themselves, well, is chasing really going to be the way forward if conditions continue to be the way they are at the moment?
Mm. Since you bring up the India-Pakistan game, let's just finish by talking about the shot as it's now known. Yes. As you know, as a former England batter, try and get across how absurd it is to hit a ball that quick and that short in that place.
I don't know. I've seen him do it before. I remember I was out in India 2016, and as captain of RCB, they had to go on like a six match winning streak or something to get through to the playoffs. And he and AB de Villiers just went on this run of playing unbelievable innings. And I remember watching him then and watching both of them hit balls from above the top of the stumps with both feet on the floor, with a straight bat, back over mid on, back over mid off, and just thinking at the time, how are they doing? How are they generating that sort of power from deliveries of that length and of that speed? So it's just, you pull off something that is so executionally difficult as that in a situation like that against one of the best. You know, we watched Harris Ralph bowling at the death against England in Pakistan. Just thought, wow, this guy's seriously good. And of course, you then hit what would be his best ball. You know, he's run up with having bowled a brilliant over. You hit his best ball, flying over the top of middle and off, back over his head for six off the back foot. And now the bowler's going back to his muck and going, now what the hell do I do? You know, and then the next delivery bowl was a terrible delivery. You know, pace on down the leg side, and he just lifted it up for six. But can you imagine what that did to the guy who let go of the ball to watch that disappear back over his head? It's stunning. We had the Carl Mayo's one, didn't we? We had the sort of the shot over extra cut. I think, given that the ball was straight, given that Kohli didn't particularly give himself a massive amount of room, given that it was Harris Ralph, and given that it had to go for six, otherwise they weren't going to get there. That's probably one of the greatest shots I've ever seen.
That's a good way to end it. Cheers, Butch. See you next week.
The day's second game between New Zealand and Afghanistan was completely washed out, which is probably good news for England with the Black Caps dropping points. And it is worth reiterating that if England do win all the remaining games, they are still guaranteed a spot in the semis. But at the moment, with rain and England's form, etc., that is a big if. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. And if you did enjoy, please leave us a nice, maybe even a 5-star review on the app.
Podcast Network.